Dynamite Download.
Special event, as you can see, SPD.
For a splashing good time.
Welcome to Dynamite Download.
What's going on, SPD? You grooving this morning?
I'm grooving, man. Good morning. Top of the morning to you. It's nice to nice mug there. You know, merch mug.
Thank you.
In our merch store. That we're kind of getting back to our normal recaps for sure. You know,
yeah.
It's been a struggle. Or it's been a challenge for sure that AEW has been doing all these adjustments for the NBA and Friday
very
night
giving,
shows.
Very giving of AEW to be a team player like that. Let the NBA take the center stage. It is the playoffs after all.
Playoffs.
I do think SPD, like, you know, last week's show, it felt like AEW got some criticism that the show didn't feel like a big deal, especially being the first one post Double or Nothing. And the ratings reflected that, unfortunately. But this week's show, I felt, I don't know about you, brother, but right. I felt like this show came out swinging. Like, I felt like AEW kind of maybe heard those criticisms and said, all right, haters. And this show definitely delivered. I felt like this kind of got back into the vibe, the groove of what we're used to, where every Dynamite is just a banger, right? Like we were getting so spoiled, where like every episode was jam packed and was phenomenal, hitting hard. And this episode felt like that kind of vibe. It was a great overall show to me.
It definitely was, and you know, it went really fast. I was surprised how quick this show went with so many different segments, so many different storylines that were tying together and get you excited for the upcoming. You know, July is going to be a huge month. You know, we just got to get through this challenge. You know, a tough June with scheduling, and who knows when they're going to. You know, they came back with some heavy hitting live events with the big crowds, and then now you know moving away from a couple tape shows like. But then, you know, the announcement for all those four events in July, you got the Fyter Fest two-night things, the Road Rager down in Miami, and then the Fight for the Fallen in North Carolina.
You know so, that. Yeah, I knew you were going to drop that.
And so, I mean, they just got to get through a challenging June and just have a explosive July for sure once they hit the road. I mean, you know those crowds, those people who haven't been able to go down to Jacksonville are itching to see some live events. I mean, it shows. I mean, you know, the numbers on the TV show when they are in their sweet spot. So it's going to be great. It's going to be a great, fun summer of pain for AEW. And
the crowd a lot last of great night, pieces. I mean, the live crowds are really hitting hard, and I can't wait to see what it'll be like when they go on tour.
Yeah.
The energy is definitely there. The AEW fan base is hot for the product. There's a lot of changing of the landscape going on, a lot of exciting things happening
for sure.
In AEW. And ETK himself said, you know, guys, stick with us through June. We know it's a challenge. We know those 10 o'clock starts on a Friday, not the hottest time spot. We get it. But stick with us through June.
Sure.
And we promise you that July will be worth it. So, you know, TK always delivers. And we here at Dynamite Download have been, you know, we're very well aware. The long game, like the AEW always plays that long game. Like as SPD likes to say, stretch it out.
Milk it.
You got to milk it. AEW, I have a feeling, you know, they're trying to get their footing post Double or Nothing with these weird changes to the schedule. I think that once July comes around, they're going to start really hitting it hard. But honestly, man, this show – You could have told me it was July 10th, and I would have been, all right, yeah, man, because this show was delivering, man. This show was absolutely, I felt like, a banger. I loved the way this show flowed. you know, we started off with Christian Cage going against Angelico. Really enjoyed that match. Felt like that was that's one that we could get into as far as technical prowess on display. Loving what we're seeing with the potential of Christian versus Matt Hardy. That old feud.
Oh, for sure. Love that,
that nostalgia idea. Getting us all excited inside. I really enjoy that one. And anytime I get a chance to see Dirtbag Jack Evans, you know I'm happy.
Well, let's just dive right into that, man. Let's start with that one. I mean, we saw the match results there. We had a packed not only six matches, but also multiple segments. But we led off the show, and it was fun to with our pre-show. I really did enjoy our pre-show and kind of like fantasy booking the card. You know, the card's set, but it's like, how would you book it? The flow. And you know, I don't think I've gotten a show flow right. You know, I picked like a
Young
an
Bucks.
Opening or something, but it's so strategic they do it. But starting the show with Christian Cage, you know, outwork everyone himself with Angelico, like with HFO standing in the ring, cutting a promo. I think that was a great way to start it off. Obviously to trim some time, like you lose the TH2 entrance that we love, but you got a promo from a guy who's like A+ on the mic right now.
Yep.
And to start with an HFO promo, it was awesome, man. And you know, we're fans of TH2, and that's another one of those teams that you've been preaching to the community, preaching to us here at Dynamite Download. And Helico's style and Jack Evans together are really fun to watch. I mean, the guy's got him himself should be the man with 1,000 holds. I mean, his groundwork is awesome. Really love his style. And Christian Cage, man, he matched up really well with him. You know, he was really doing a great job elevating these young guys and really putting them to the test and putting them over, you know, put everyone over. Some people say that's his saying as well. But it's deserving. You know, everyone he's been in the ring with is deserving of more of a shine, more of, you know, not just getting beat just to get beat by a veteran.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Even though, like, you know, he's coming out on top on a lot of these matchups, I feel like that's my thing is, you know, you look at the match against Powerhouse Hobbs, you look at this match, you know, the consistent narrative of Christian's matches are that they're great storytelling and that both guys always come out looking better. And that to me is lost art. You know, a lot of times these guys got to go in and get their moves in.
Yep.
There's kind of that forgotten part of let's get the fans engaged. What story are we trying to tell in this match? And it was evident from the get-go that Angelico was determined that this was a match where we were going to see Angelico, like you talked about, that guy's submission game and how fluid he can be from hold to hold. I really love how that guy transitions from move to move. It's like he's always thinking, he's always trying to keep things moving in his direction. Really enjoy that with him. And you know, I think that like this is the cherry on top of the Christian signing. When you can have guys where he can have obviously his own star power, but if he can have these matches where as an end result, you're getting maybe lesser known talents, opportunities to have big matchups. You know, we talked about the Matt Sydal match. We talked about the Powerhouse Hobbs match. And now this one falls in line with that. Just really a consistency from Christian that is needed in AEW. I think that veteran presence, you know, a guy who knows how to slow things down when they need to slow down, knows how to play the crowd, really a great teacher through just the body of work is really important to do. And you mentioned TH2, you know, I feel like Angelico has adapted some of, you know, he's not just a high flyer. He's, you know, he's adapted and really become a strong submission specialist. Getting Jack Evans an opportunity to come out there. I know Jack's gotten kind of the slap on the wrist for, you know, some of the missed moves that he's had of recently, you know, and he's even acknowledging it now on Twitter that he's the king of the botch, which is kind of funny.
But he goes for it more than anyone else, though. Like, you're going to botch your moves if you're going to do these risky, unique, one-of-a-kind moves. But as you were saying,
that's what I always say with Jack is that, like, he goes for things. He attempts things that a lot of people wouldn't even dream of. And so, you know, I can appreciate that about him. I think that TH2, when they work together, you have Jack Evans in doses and you have Angelico who can kind of be that steady force.
Sure.
I like what they're doing with Matt Hardy. I love what he like everything. Now that Butch is hurt, you're bringing in TH2 now to kind of fill in some of that role. Think about how much growth we've seen out of Private Party just by being associated with Matt Hardy. I'm digging it. I'm digging it. And I really think that this match and post match beatdown set the tone for something that I think is going to be exciting going forward. Christian versus Matt Hardy. I really, obviously touches on those childhood feuds, and two pros who know what they're doing, know how to keep us engaged.
The promo work that Matt Hardy's going to do, and this constant kind of like hiding in the dark, cheap moves, heel Matt Hardy is awesome. And, I don't care what any critics say, like to reignite this feud is going to be absolutely gold. And we're going to see some great work out of both of them as well. And speaking of reigniting, igniting more, another feud is your favorite Cody Rhodes and QT Marshall.
Yeah.
We saw what I thought was actually a pretty comical part of the night was Tony Schiavone came in.
Yep.
And he's like, we have an in-ring debut, Brock Anderson. I thought he should have gone all kayfabe and been
he was trolling people. Yeah, now that would have been sweet.
Anderson.
He had people guessing on Twitter, like, oh my gosh, it was so funny. Tony definitely trolled people there a little bit. And this is a really, I feel like, another logical step in the Factory versus the Nightmare Family feud.
Sure.
Because you think about what that is based off of, the disrespect that the Factory was getting, the disrespect that Cody was kind of feeling like everything was because of him,
right?
The star power of the family overshadowing the work that the Factory was putting in.
Right.
Really like how that and QT came out and addressed that, bro. QT came out. He made sure that was the bones of his promo was, joking and ribbing about how the pyro and, oh great, now another guy you're gonna bring in and just shove down our throats. I loved how QT was talking about, you're gonna bring him in from the rafters. Where's the pyro? All this stuff. And again, it touches on just that feeling like the underdog. And that's why I love QT is, even though he's the bad guy, even though he's the heel, there is some logic to what he's saying. I love when our characters and the motivations they have is based in some sort of form of reality, when it makes sense, you can follow it. And if you're QT Marshall, I can understand feeling a little overlooked again, continuing to be brushed aside. The guy has been absolutely a killer performer this year. The character work that he's put in, the what's happening with the Factory, the stories that are getting built up with these guys, really love what they're doing. And this is another step where, okay, great. Now another guy that Cody's favoring is going to get this big opportunity. So I really dig that they're not letting this feud die.
Yes, I agree. And what better way to hype up? I loved what QT say. First off, Rolex wearing, gold chain rocking, man. He's adding that and another bowling shirt to his
It was a beautiful bowling shirt. Yes.
It was a great one for sure. But I loved what QT had to say was, I want to whip your ass in front of a live crowd, like literally. And then so the South Beach strap match is set for July 7th. So I think I love these graphics and the colors, man. It totally fits South Beach. But
Miami,
QT Marshall and Cody Rhodes in a South Beach strap match coming up, man. That's getting me hyped for sure. And I think you have to have QT come out on top on this, really, to get some momentum. I mean, he's got some momentum on his side. I mean, he pinned Cody, according to him. And so to really push the Factory, like, the leader needs to come out on top in a South Beach strap match. And to have a stipulation like this, it can be done for sure.
Yeah, I think that you nailed it there, brother. I think when you talk about like the way that this feud was going, Bonds was so depressed post Double or Nothing, where it felt like he was like, oh, the Factory, this group that we love, was getting was going to get dropped. After losing clean to Cody with a go-go, losing clean, there was some concern that this group was going to kind of lose its footing. This was a really great way to quickly come out and reestablish. These guys aren't getting buried. There's a lot of potential, a lot of promise with that group. And this is a great way to kind of give QT that edge You know, to have, we know that the history that Cody has with straps, you know, with the MJF feud, that MJF feud, like Cody will take a beating. He has no problem taking those lashings. So I think that if you like, you lean into, again, you know, I love that QT Soprano vibe, bro. You lean into QTB. Yeah. You lean into QT being that mob boss and just, you know, I just laying into a beating, a vicious beating on Cody. I could really dig that. And I think that there's a lot of that could then reignite this feud that much further. I think that that would be that much more exciting going forward. You know, I'm rooting for QT in that one.
Me too. You know, I'm a huge Cody mark, but I'm definitely rooting for QT because I want to see his character develop into more and something that he deserves and something that he's been working hard to. And he's really been honing in on it. And I think he's doing a fantastic job. And I can't wait to chat with him one day about it because it is just all gold right there. Just like gold around his neck and his wrists last night. So I'll let you start with this one because I know you're just salivating over this because this was an outstanding trios match. And, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Mm. And so we saw the sleazy Young Bucks with Brandon Cutler, which I was surprised he got cleared based on what, you know, his broken orbital bones.
Oh, man, yeah.
Versus an awesome combination, you know, Pac, Penta, and Eddie.
I love this match. Going into it, this was the match I was juiced about the most going into Dynamite. You know, like the Bucks, I'm a tag team guy, and then you got the Death Triangle involved. You know I'm going to be geeking. Absolutely loved this. Thought that, like, when you look at the big picture of the way this story played out too, I mean, AEW really leaned into that history that Kingston and Pac had, and I thought that was really smart, right? Again,
I love that.
Rather than just throwing some guys together and having a match, you add layers and complexity to this story. You know, we're wondering what's going to happen throughout this match. And it started out right away with Pac. You know, when he went to make that tag, he tagged in Penta. He didn't tag in Kingston. There was a lot of tension there. And that tension played a role. It was slowly simmering throughout the match. I really was wondering how that's going to go because, you know, even though on paper you're looking at like, all right, there's an obvious weak link. This is a 6-man match, absolutely loaded with talent. When you got the Young Bucks, our tag team champions going against the Death Triangle with Pac and Penta, and then Eddie Kingston, who's one of our favorites. You got that kind of talent in the ring. You obviously look, okay, Brandon Cutler, you're wondering, is he going to be the guy who's the weak link in this match? Well, when you add that layer, that wrinkle of, like, can Pac and Kingston put their tensions aside and focus on the goal at hand, it starts to level that playing field. And I thought that really played a role in this match. What was awesome, too, was the ending, right? The ending, Kingston earned Pac's trust, hopefully. I think that's he had his back. You know, he helped secure the win. And I felt like by leaning into that aesthetic, the larger picture of this war is starting to brew. And for me, when I look at the way this is starting to happen, you have the Good Brothers, Kenny, and the Bucks on one side. And then on the other side, you have Pac and Penta, Moxley and Kingston, and Frankie Kazarian, the Elite Hunter, which was another
awesome. I loved when they said that, the announcers. I love that nickname, and it's, you know, tweeted out for us. I was like, the Elite Hunter coming in like a black hoodie and then just taking it down, man, with this nice scruff, new kind of look.
Yeah,
it was great, man.
Got a little extra edge to him. I'm digging that vibe, that aesthetic that Frankie's rocking right now. You can tell he's hungry, he's angry, and like it's all the more powerful. He's not cutting promos. He's not doing all this stuff.
Sure.
my man Pac there. You know, Frankie is got this like mystique about him right now. When is he gonna strike? And with what they did with the Bucks, what they did to SCU, it makes all that much more sense. He's going to want a pound of flesh and, you know, of revenge. Really dig that. This is a feud that, like, you know, when we did our pre-show, we were talking about, like, the Elite is involved in so many things. And that's a beautiful thing. That's a great thing. But this is a feud where you're starting to see, like, there are clear leaders as far as they're going to be feuding with that are emerging. And these guys are that. I really think that we're going to be in for a treat. Seeing the difference of styles. I mean, you throw Kingston into the mix with Pac and Penta. It's just a very different – you got that true brawler, that true street fighter with a guy like Pac who's you know, an acrobatic, just absolute freak as far as that goes. And Penta kind of has that submission game. It's just an interesting vibe. I really dig that. What were your thoughts on the match itself? Because for me, for in-ring work, this one was just clicking on all cylinders.
It really was. And honestly, like, give the credit where credit is due. Like, I love Cutler's storytelling too, and just everything about him. And like, you know, I want to give props to him because obviously, like, you think of the landscape of who's in the ring, like
the landscape.
Cutler, you know, Cutler's not on the level of some of the other guys, but he did an awesome job. I mean, I love his cool spray stuff, his funniness, his tracksuit, all that stuff for sure. But some of the stuff, I mean, and he took some beatings, man. He took a killer chop from Penta to start things off. I was like cringing. I'm like, oh my gosh. But, you know, and it's funny on commentary, Callis is there. This is burying Cutler so much. He's going to have to clean the dojo for 5 hours. He's going to have to give me 5,000 push-ups or whatever. Like, it's so funny, man. And, you
I'm
know,
I'm glad you mentioned that, though. I'm really glad you mentioned that. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the commentary because that was like the commentary in AEW has been on point, but this really felt like this match was one that stood out to me. The commentary was absolutely on fire during this match. Don Callis's addition is such a nice, like during those matches with Kenny or the Elite, when Don Callis gets added to the crew, it's such a joy to watch.
I completely agree, man. He is absolute gold, just like when we hear Taz on commentary. So to add that, you know, fourth dimension for a fourth one, you know, you think four people on commentary, it's overcrowded, but it really isn't. They don't talk over each other. They got a great flow, great chemistry. But this match, man, not only Cutler was funny, but he took so many kicks and abuse from his own team.
I know.
And, you know, there's I love the Young Bucks' entrance. And then I don't know if you caught it, but they did like a Ray Phoenix kind of a fake impression where he, instead of like swinging through the ropes, he kind of just jumped around the ropes and super kicked maybe Eddie or something. But I did love the, obviously Pac's 450 into the Brutalizer is an absolute most brutal 1-2 punch probably out there right now. I mean, I name a better one. I challenge you.
You know, I'm not going to
try
to
name a better 1-2 punch.
Yeah,
you know, whether it be like a super kick and or like a V trigger and the one winged angel or something like that. I don't, you know, I think the 450 into the Brutalizer is absolutely worse because you're getting instant pain and then right away getting jumped on into a submission.
Yes, exactly.
A torture rack on the ground.
Yeah.
I thought it was. Eddie told some great stories this whole match, just like you said, man, you know, kind of be selfless where he finished them and he gave Pac the pin, the selfless sacrifice, what he did for Moxley, you know, to prove himself, to prove his loyalty. And so Eddie did an outstanding job with his storytelling, did an outstanding job with trying to win over. I mean, he's over with the crowd so much, man. It's awesome to see his growth for sure. And, you know, this is an interesting part, this new layer to it. I can't wait to see what's in store. You know, next week we got Matt Jackson and the Good Brothers versus, what is it, Frankie, Eddie, and Penta? Is that the combo, I think?
Yeah.
I got the next week card.
And to me, like, when I look at the way this goes, man, we talk a lot about if we were fantasy booking, if we were TK, man, like, how do you resist the urge of putting the Bucks against these guys, like, against Pac and Penta? I mean, it's you know, having chess pieces like that where you can play off, you could throw Pac into any sort of feud and it's just immediately going to be a banger of a match. And your tag champs are the same way, man. The Young Bucks, you think about the countless good matches, you said it from the get, you know, name a bad Young Bucks match. It's just, it doesn't happen. So when you have that kind of level of consistency of excellence in that to lead the division, there's so many opportunities for great stuff going forward. And again, for me, before we jump and go to the next one, with the way the Bucks are playing these, like the way their vibe is right now, right? Like with how cocky and over the top, like attitude that they have is right now. You busted out the danglies last night for us with their over the top showmanship. You know, it's such a beautiful contrast when you put them up against a team that's so no nonsense. I mean, Pac, for me, like that dude is just an angry bastard, just dialed in, razor focused. But you look at like Eddie Kingston too. I mean, this is a dude whose story is he's not about like fun and games and jokes, dude. Sure. This guy cut his teeth on the independents. Wondered if he would ever even get to this spot. While the Young Bucks are laughing and joking around, this is a dude who, like, I mean, you think about the passionate speeches that he's given in the AEW locker room.
Sold his boots.
Yeah, I mean, this is a dude who's like who lives and breathes this business. So you have like this over the top egocentric vibe for the elite being paired against this like the tough like you know every man vibe, this angry like we like trying to prove themselves, huge chip on their shoulder type of mentality on the other side of the ring. It's just a really nice way to juxtapose those types of mentalities where, you know, this is so natural to us. We're so good. We're God's gift to wrestling versus a team that really is about, you know, always trying to prove themselves week after week after week. I really dig that, like the way that that story is being told. And it's one of the many layers of this story. That's what I love about it. It's not just, you know, we're mad at you because you beat us up or you give us a sneak attack. There's a lot of layers to this story that I really enjoy. And I think that the more they play into it, the more exciting it's going to get, man. Now adding Frankie Kazarian to the mix, we know that the long history with Mox and Kingston going against the Bucks, there's just a lot of heat here. Parties involved. And I love how Kingston's laying it on the table, man. Like, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And that can be our common denominator. That could be the glue that holds this wild crew. I mean, dude, think about the way that crew is, like the talent and the different personalities. If they can all jive together to focus in on beating the elite. We talked about that going into Double or Nothing, Moxley and Kingston, you know, that's like a super group, you know? And if you start talking about super groups, like the Marvel Avengers come unite, you bring in Pac, you bring in Penta, you bring in the Elite Hunter, all of a sudden you have like this amazing crew that when you put them on paper going against the elite can stack up and certainly could push those guys to the limit. I'm really excited to see where this one goes.
Just need Ray Phoenix back, and then it'll be a home run hit. But
yes, sir.
Speaking of home runs hits, man, we heard from the Pinnacle. We saw them to kick off Dynamite, leaving their limousine riding, suit wearing. And I love that tweet that you posted. I don't know where it came from, but how Pee Wee Herman is joining the Pinnacle because there's the gray suit.
Yeah, Nyla Rose dropped a little, little visual of that, and that was really funny. Nyla's hilarious on Twitter, so when you follow her on social, she was on point tonight, man. Between social media and her match later with Legit Layla, but yeah, I mean, to me, when the Pinnacle is wearing suits, you know they mean business, brother. When they come, it's a perfect vibe. And when they come strutting into the building with all decked out in suits, they looked like they were fired up. They had a lot to say tonight. Unpack and unravel a little bit. Yeah, I know, because this is one of your favorite segments of the whole night, right?
It definitely was my favorite segment. I mean, obviously, anytime these two teams get together, it's absolutely pure gold. And I feel like, you know, I was texting Bonds, and I was like, Tony must just have an open check for like what you want to do with each segment. Like, obviously Stadium Stampede was a big high budget, you know, the bubbly bath, and then now this destroying stuff. So it's like this top feud is like, do what you want, and it's just going to run this high tab on it, whatever it takes. And it's great. You know, what I'm liking the most about this feud is everyone getting the chance to shine. You know, you're not having just the leaders. And so, goes the same with the Inner Circle and the Pinnacle. You're getting every individual star powers. And, you know, Dax to start out on the mic, which we absolutely love, Uncle Dax. You know, how I loved his line where he said that FTR and Santana Ortiz are very similar. You know, they both came from nothing but made something of themselves. And, you know, standing across from me, you're in Wardlow's world. Like, Wardlow's awesome, was very, you know, Wardlow was great on the mic, very
clear. Talking about how Hager's angry. Obsessed with him. Yeah.
Yeah, so, and then even Sean Spears had to be cut off because he was so passionate. And, of course, I mean, MJF, you know, you can only say so much good stuff about him because he is pure gold and smooth on the mic.
He is.
Denying him a match, you know, we talked about that in our pre-show. You know, he's 2-0 against Chris Jericho. Where do you go from there? And we've been fantasy booking that Sammy versus MJF match. It's kind of hinting for that. You know, months ago when Sammy kind of left the Inner Circle, I predicted Sammy's going to give MJF that first L on his record.
That's true.
And it still could be leaning that way. But, you know, Sammy on Twitter was commenting to us like, how he has no interest in fighting MJF. But before we talk about what happened with Inner Circle, what do you think about the Pinnacle's promos?
So. Well, I think that you nailed it too, across the board. Like, I love seeing all these guys get the opportunity to shine. That's a big part of it. Dissecting each one, you know, I felt like you just said, MJF versus Sammy, the potential hinting of that down the road, that's a match that I need to see. You know, I think that's a home run pick. I feel when you look at the way the chess pieces are, FTR versus Santana and Ortiz, these are two teams that if you're a tag team mark like I am, if you love tag team wrestling, this is as good as it gets, guys. I mean, this is as good as it gets. And we just got done talking about the Bucks versus the Death Triangle. But when you throw in the veteran presence that both these teams have, the pride that these two crews have, they're not backing down from anybody. That to me is such a home run matchup. When you get this, when you put those two together, and you and I talk a lot about like how fun it is when you see different styles going against each other. When you put two teams that are very similar in styles, like these guys are, just punch you in the mouth. You know, a lot of like there's not a lot of this like high spots and all this crazy that these guys are going to grind you down, you know, just beat you into the mat and put you down. That's the type of vibe that these two teams have. So I feel like two very proud, very strong tag teams with a lot of chemistry together. And honestly, you know, two teams that look at themselves as the top guys in the industry. They're going to be a lot on the line whenever they lock horns. And so I'm really geeked to see how AEW plays that out and what they give us going forward in that one. We always talk about Wardlow on the, in the ring and what the potential he has when they unleash him. But I also felt like he did a great job on the mic. He was very poised, very, like you said, fired up, made a lot of, he was very pointed with what he had to say, and put Jake Hager on the spot. So the Pinnacle delivered, and then some. I can understand why, you know, this segment hit so hard for you, because, you know, when you look at how smooth, polished, you know, angry the Pinnacle was, and I thought that the commentary crew did a great job in highlighting, like, they lost at Double or Nothing. They came up short. They got to be so embarrassed. I mean, I remember hearing all these things, you know, how embarrassed did these guys have to feel that they dropped the ball and all that stuff. Right. It adds so much fire to their promo. And when you put like those guys on the stick and then you got to see what followed up afterwards with the Inner Circle,
my gosh,
you had to be grinning ear to ear, because it had to be like, this was for me, when you saw the Inner Circle destroying the limo, those guys had to just enjoy every minute of it. That's what I was laughing so hard last night when they did this, because it was like they had to just genuinely be having a lot of fun. They just, like, when Jake Hager drove that forklift into the side of the limo and like at full speed, he and then lifted it up off the ground. Like, imagine being able to do that. Like you said,
that'd be so fun.
Yeah, Tony is just like, guys, do whatever you want. Like, imagine being Jake Hager and having the opportunity to drive a forklift into a side of a limo and then lift it up off the ground. Just the fun that had to be. Like, these guys have to be enjoying every minute of this feud. It's just an absolute blast, and it shows in the product.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I thought they were going to just do a couple like broken windows and things like that. But when they got the forklift out, oh my gosh, I can't believe it just lifted right off the ground. Like, it was just crumbling. It was absolutely hilarious. And, you know, when you hear Jericho interrupt the promo, you're like, uh-oh, they're outside. What are they up to? And it's like, what are they going to do next? And that's what I can't wait. You know, finally, we're going to see an interesting cage match next week. So we're going to see a battle. But, like, I feel like Inner Circle is going to constantly keep terrorizing the Pinnacle, and it's going to be so fun, especially once they start going to live crowds. I mean, it's a perfect time for Inner Circle to turn babyface. And, you know, they're so over right now, and they're going to continue to get over. And for them to just constantly terrorize the Pinnacle, you know, week in and week out, you know, that's what's going to make it the Summer of Pain, and it's going to be absolutely pure gold and help AEW just elevate that much farther, because of the top group in AEW is, you know, the fan favorite, you know? So this stuff is perfect for what they're doing. You know, I can't say good enough good stuff about these five guys. Like,
better get an Uber, bitch. I love that line, dude. I was dying.
The pinnacle's Uber and home. You know, my favorite. You know, anytime the five of these guys are on screen, like, my eyes just glue to Santana, because that guy is just so good on screen. He's just so elevating himself, and I just love all the work that he's doing, man. This guy is a pure star, and, you know, he's got so much swagger, and I can't wait to watch him just grow even more in these next coming months with this feud, because Santana is the best, man.
The best! I mean, you're right, brother. I mean, and that's one of the fun parts, one of the unexpected fun things when you get feuds like this, right, where it's like – It could easily just be, and you've talked to me about this on Jericho, Talk as Jericho. This could easily just be Chris Jericho and his crew against MJF and crew. It's not presented. It's not presented that way whatsoever. It's really an opportunity for all these guys to shine. Sammy has had his moments where you look at, wow, this guy is a legit. We've all had moments where we felt like that guy is a breakout star. Well,
for sure.
Taking that to another level, he continues to, I think for us, want to see him get those moments, get those opportunities, right? Like you talked about, imagine him being the guy who gives MJF his first loss, clean singles loss. You know, like Santana has definitely elevated his game in this. Wardlow has gone from just being sort of like a guy who we thought had a ton of potential to a guy that we know has a ton of potential.
Sure.
He's delivering every time he gets an opportunity. The man is checking the boxes. You know, they obviously, when you're paired with MJF, you're not going to get a lot of opportunity to get some words in, but Wardlow, when he gets the stick, the guy delivers, man. So I feel like across the board, this is giving different guys week after week opportunities to shine, and we're getting surprised as fans. We're getting treats as fans. Dax, how many times during the rise of the pinnacle have you stepped back and said, wow, like Dax is a star?
Yeah.
You know, like countless times.
Yeah.
It's across the board in this feud, man. I love how that's going. And the Summer of Pain, the way this whole segment played out, you know, everybody addressed each other, and like you've talked about it week after week. Take those the Yahtzee dice, throw them on the table, give us a matchup, let us see more of it. So we got to see the gang warfare up to this point. We got to see the 5-on-5s up to this point. We're starting to feel like, okay, the clear pieces of these different matches, it's going to stretch into the Summer of Pain, and you're going to see these different matches that we've been wanting to see, the salivating over the potential of this breaking down this feud that much further. Really excited about what's going to happen in the summer.
Man, it is going to be a great Summer of Pain with these guys leading the charge. We'll shift into
talk about pain.
I know
Darby might be in store for some feeds going down the path that he's thinking of. A 2-on-1 handicap match. He's accepting, you know. Going into this week, there was a lot of like speculation. Who is Darby's tag partner going to be, SPD? We all had different ideas. But I don't think any of us thought that Darby would be bold or crazy enough to take on this match in a handicap match. What were your thoughts when you heard him drop that bombshell?
You know, in typical dark scenic promo of Darby, you know, this promo honestly didn't hit as much as I wanted it to. You know, I want a little bit more out of Darby, but him to stay at home, it almost felt like telling your dad not to come to your football game or something like that.
You know,
like, I got this, you know, I don't want you to watch me or something like that. But, you know, I know you are the conductor of the Darby Express. So for him to do that is kind of like a wow factor. I think the way it plays out, though, is like, obviously Darby can't take down two of these beasts in Paige and Sky, you know, the men of the year, which we heard from a little bit later in the show, which I love the men of the year.
Yeah.
Two guys that are top of their game right now. I feel like Darby is going to have some spurts, you know, the typical 90. I think someone will come out and join Darby, whether it be a surprise Sting return, you know, even though he's not coming home, or someone like you've mentioned, maybe a Lance Archer coming to save the day in a way, something like that. So I think that's the way you have to play it out. I mean, I can't imagine Darby getting a clean win over Paige and Sky.
Yeah,
you know, that would really bury them, honestly.
Yeah, you can't
the men of the year.
The men of the year, you can't do that. You know, although their vibe is definitely, you know, the men of the year, their vibe is definitely like that kind of like overly cocky.
Sure, of course.
You know, and like those guys are always fun to watch when something bad happens to them. How they react, like scrambling out of embarrassment, and how they spin it so that they continue to stay cocky. So I mean, nothing would surprise me.
Sure.
But I have to say this bombshell by Darby was completely out of left field, but it fits his character so well.
Definitely.
And so it's a win-win, right? This is an opportunity going into the pay-per-view. You and I talked a lot about, you know, do you have Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page lose? They were climbing the rankings in the tag division and clearly moving in a way that felt like they were emerging as legitimate tag team contenders.
Sure.
And you know, I'm a huge fan of this pairing. Ethan Page feels very much
heel.
You know it. Ethan Page, when you talk about heels, this dude is emerging quickly as a superstar. Every time he's on the mic, this guy knows how to cut killer promos. He's got the look. I love the Ethan's Edge. He's kind of got some size to him, which is good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I like Scorpio Sky's new shirt. I dug that. I feel like being paired with Ethan Page takes a lot of pressure off of Scorpio to carry promos,
right.
Although he's been doing a nice job. I mean, I think that he's been holding his own alongside Ethan Page. I think just having that pairing allows Scorpio to get his footing underneath him. You know, we haven't gotten a lot of Scorpio on his own. When he debuted here in AEW, he was with SCU, and he's always kind of been a team guy. He's getting more and more opportunities now to have mic work, to have promo work, and we all know he's a wrestling savant. We know what he can do in the ring, but now that he's being paired with a guy like Ethan Page, who you know oozes confidence, very smooth on the mic, you're seeing some of that rub off on Scorpio, and you're starting to see him kind of being able to breathe and realize, man, we're gonna kill it, we're gonna crush it, no matter what, because I got this guy to come in. She's going to swoop in if things go off the tracks. I think they're working really, really well together. And the way this feud is trending, it's not just being cocky.
Yeah.
There's an edge to these guys. They have a little bit like throwing Darby down the flight of steps, you know, wanting to end Sting's career. There's an anger to them, which is really working. Darby going in as an underdog now allows AEW, after the men of the year loss at the pay-per-view, it allows them to get a convincing win. Like you talked about, Darby can fight valiantly and come up short, and everybody comes out looking better in the end. This is what I love when AEW is able to tap into those win-win situations. You have Darby, who is the ultimate underdog, go into a match where it's, you know, he's basically going into the lion's den. He's going in 2-on-1 situation against a guy, Scorpio, who recently won the brass ring, you know, and Ethan Page, who is a hot free agent that got into AEW.
Sure.
You got a win-win situation where Darby, even if he loses, still comes out looking like $1 million. It plays into his character where as the underdog guy who is defiant, doesn't want to like take a handout from anybody. And then you can lean into these two guys, Ethan Page and Scorpio, being total dirtbags. You know, like they're not going to apologize. They gave Darby, think about it from their perspective, they gave Darby an opportunity to pick a tag partner. This loner loser punk couldn't even find a friend. So now, like, okay, if you want to come into this match 2-on-1, let's prove something to you. Let's prove a point and just beat the crap out of you, right? Like, just beat the piss out of you. And I think that that's going to be a really cool aesthetic. If you let those two guys get that, like, show off what they can do in the ring.
Sure.
Really milk it. Get the crowd invested. You know, milk it. Imagine what the crowd's reaction will be when when Darby is getting pummeled 2-on-1. Ooh. And he's begging, like, he's, you know, pure, he's heat. Trying. Oh man, it's gonna be fantastic. It's gonna make Darby that much more over. Choo choo! Darby Express is coming into the station. And it's gonna put even more heat. It's gonna put even more heat on the Men of the Year. I think that this is one of those bookings where it's a win-win. I love what they did here. I don't want this feud to end because mm-hmm. I think that it gives all guys a purpose. And you could clearly see that it's working. What they have right now, the formula is working right now. I think that this is going to continue going forward in the weeks that come. And if you get a brutal beatdown from Sky and Paige on Darby, it's only going to add that much more fuel to the fire. Because Sting's watching at home, which Darby was begging him, don't come next week. Sting's watching at home. You know Stinger is going to be fired up if he sees Darby getting beaten down like that, right? He's going to want a piece of them himself.
For sure. Maybe he could, like, if he sees something going a little too sour, he can, you know, shut the lights off, make it there snow, and not necessarily appear, but just kind of his like creepy, you know, aura, you I know, like showcase it. Something like that. But, you know, a lot to say about that one. I mean, for sure, it's very intriguing, and it's a nice sub feud away from when he lost the TNT title to Miro, the best man Miro, which they're still using that in his intro, the best man. So I don't know if they're going to keep that for a while or what, but he is definitely the best champ right now because he's the meanest one there for sure.
Yep.
And I, you know, this match, you know, leading up to it, they did a great job hyping it. They did a great job with the pre-promos on social media. Both Uno and Miro had some great promos leading up to it. And the constant, like, Brody Lee tributes to this whole – during the whole match. Yeah, thank you for the shirt, RIP. During the whole match and before it with all the promos and stuff. So how much it meant to them, I like that. And then, you know, -1 having part in this match as well. But, you know, other than we know Miro's, you know, dominance and toughness, he wasn't even flinching at the Uno chops and just his angriness. But, you know, got to give credit for Uno, man. That guy put up a good fight. He's one that we talked about in our pre-show. He's very underrated for someone you see on paper or you just see walking
around.
If I put
a mask on, you'd think like, okay, Crayfish, he got into AEW. Like, right. He doesn't have that, like, when from a visual point perspective, you're right. You put him versus Miro in the ring and you're like, oh God, this poor guy, he's going to get destroyed. Right. I mean, Miro has got muscles that are bulging from his ears. And Uno is just like, it seems like a regular guy, right? He's just out there following his dream.
But he's not regular in the ring.
No, that's the thing. That's the thing. He's incredibly athletic you get shocked when you see what this guy can do. You know, the hustle that he put in, and you could tell he brought his A game in this match with Miro. And that was what I loved about it. SPD, you have a dominant force like Miro, and the way he's being presented right now, this is what's great about it. You start to naturally start to wonder who can stop him. Who's going to be the guy who can take Miro off his
mantle? Who can stop the path of Miro?
Miro,
that needs to be his slogan. Not
right. Pain, but. And you're right. And when you have you put Lance Archer down at the pay-per-view, you start to wonder like, who's going to be the guy who can beat Miro. And this is a great visual. I mean, you see in the background, Miro is choking out Evil Uno while -1 and the rest of the Dark Order are watching on the ramp.
Literally within arm's reach. They can't even help him.
Oh, and just like leaning into what a jerk Miro is and just like how just like non-caring he is about anything other than the gold. Miro has become, you know, changing from the best man, right? Like, he has become, I know you hated it, when he was Kip Sabian's best friend and sidekick, basically.
Right.
His character has changed so much. He went from caring about video games and Kip Sabian and Penelope's wedding to now being a guy who only only cares about hurting people and holding on to the TNT title as long as possible. It's a beautiful transformation. Angry Miro is exactly what we want out of this company. When you put that guy out there as a wrecking ball, you have gold. You have absolute gold.
Absolutely. I mean, this was this was one of the better matches. I mean, in that trios match, there's so many good matches on this card, but this one was so convincing back and forth, a lot of different layers to it. But obviously, you know, we know that Miro's not losing that gold anytime soon. And so to watch these convincing victories in a way by opponents that are, you know, worthy of an match, not just essentially a squash. It's going to be fun. You know, we're going to see this probably for weeks and weeks and weeks going ahead. You know, who do you think will challenge Miro next? Do you think it's going to be another run through the Dark Order, which they did with Darby, which I don't necessarily support. I love the Dark Order, you know, 100%. I'm in the Dark Order joining it, but I feel like you can't run through them again and have everyone come up short. Do you see any immediate challengers in the near future that pop up?
Well, that's the thing, man. I mean, you, like, just watching him in the ring and how it's going, you really start to wonder, like, who can dethrone Miro? And you know, right now, no one is coming to mind, bro. I mean, I don't want to, like, dodge the question.
Sure. But
there's no one that clearly stands out as a guy who could take this dude down. I mean, Miro is like, I mean, from pure physicality and just mental, like, in the way that he approaches the ring, This dude is, there's no wasted motion. JR was talking about that on commentary. There's no wasted motion with Miro. Everything he does is with a purpose. You know,
right.
his offense is it. There's, even when it spills to the outside, there's no stopping him. I mean, he's tossing people over the barricade. He's launching them into the steps.
Right.
Miro is just on a path right now of pure destruction. And when you see a guy who's brutal with his striking, can throw people around with his suplexes. I love the strength of his suplexes.
Brutal.
Athletic is all hell. There's really anybody who gets in the ring with him is going to be in for the match of their life. And so there's really no one that's emerging right now on the landscape as a clear cut guy who could take the belt off him. Now, when you're talking about the way this path is going, you know, certainly I'm a big advocate for 10. Every time I see him in the ring, I think that this is a guy who has it. He has a certain, I think, There's a draw to 10, and to see that visual, maybe Miro bullies the rest of the Dark Order for a little bit, and 10 is the guy who kind of doesn't back down.
Sure.
And that visual, that could work. Right? The visual of 10 against Miro, you know, 10's not going to be intimidated against Miro. That said, man, I don't see Miro going down anytime soon. So, you know, we don't want to see the Dark Order get pushed aside. I don't like seeing them being fed to the wolves. But I think that if the rumors are true that that Tommy End might be coming to AEW, I think that there's a natural fit with the Dark Order and Tommy End. And for me, wearing the Brody shirt, you know, I love the Dark Order. I think that they're hilarious. I think that they do great work. And I think I commend them so much for being able to navigate an incredibly difficult chapter, something that could have, you know, really broken them, broken their spirits and derailed the momentum that they were building. But they've navigated that difficult journey. They're incredibly funny. They're the home team of AEW. People want to see these guys succeed. That said, there is a massive hole that is felt with Brody's absence. And I think that the big piece of that is the intensity that Brody brought, right? Like the legitimacy that Brody brought, that fire that he brought, you know, that was what made the Dark Order so great. Was Brody would, you know, the papers and, you know, the how pissed he would get. It feels like they need somebody who isn't about just laughs and having a good time.
Of course,
and they need that leader to emerge who could kind of get them focused again on not losing anymore, You know, the Dark Order, when they started, was like, are you a loser? You know, are you tired of losing? Start winning. Join the Dark Order. And if they can – and when we had our conversations with John Silver and Alex Reynolds, both guys talked about how they miss some of that cult vibe. They miss some – they felt like there was more story to be told with that original presentation of the Dark Order. And if that could go down that path and Dart and Tommy End could come into AEW, if that could be something – talk about adding a serious edge back to the Dark Order, adding that cult vibe to the Dark Order. That would immediately refocus that group, and it could potentially be he could be the saving grace. He could be the new guy who challenges Miro. I love that idea. Other than that, bro, I don't know where you go with Miro as far as a clear cut challenger, because I don't want to see Jungle Boy getting fed to that situation. I don't want to see, you know. I think Orange Cassidy is kind of got his own thing going. You can't put these top stars in such – I think we learned from the Lance Archer situation. You can't put these top stars in these situations against Miro, because Miro's trajectory right now is so – there's no wavering. He's not going to be a guy who's going to nearly lose.
Sure.
He is absolutely dominant right now. So you have to be willing to say, like, whoever's stepping in the ring with him is going to get beaten down, right? And so I think that it's going to be a while before we start talking about who dethrones Miro.
Yeah, I don't have anyone in mind to dethrone Miro, but like the matches I still stand by, the ones I would want to see upcoming, because that no, it's a for sure lock, would be, you know, like a Penta and a Luchasaurus. So I think those would be two fun Hoss matches for Miro to really kind of, you know, show even more how dominant it is. Not that we need to know, but to go against someone like a Luchasaurus or a Penta versus a Dante Martin really is going to establish you in the ring much more stronger, in my opinion. But you know, speaking of Jungle Boy, you know, this is a fun segment for sure. Kenny looking like $1 million as always, and you know, just being so confident on the mic, and he even says it. And I love how him and Don were saying there's a conspiracy behind all this, the conspiracy. And they showed that clip of, you know, they doctored the clip from Double or Nothing. So I thought it was just hilarious. And he made a good point though. Like, you know, Jungle Boy has not been much of a talker, or isn't much of a talker on the mic, which he doesn't really, it doesn't necessarily need that, because he shows in the ring. And so for him to come out and confront him and then, you know, go face to face before the Young Bucks ruined it, I thought it was great, man. You know, he just is, the tone is set. And that's perfectly what Kenny did. Kenny did that with the Orange Cassidy and Pac match, especially he set the tone with Orange Cassidy perfectly.
You're right.
Made it so much more relevant. Yep. And now he's setting the tone with Jungle Boy, and just like the screaming, angry Kenny is so fun to me. And it's so great, like that level of him. And so, this match, we knew on paper it was a dream title match, because these guys are going to be so well. It's going to be so well wrestled, for sure. And we know Jungle Boy is just top.
That's
of this
for
game.
Sure. That's for sure, bro. I could not agree with you more. Yeah. The in-ring work that we're going to see between these two is going to be amazing.
Yeah. So this set the tone, set the bar for the stage is set for what do we got? Like two,
it's all,
you know,
the
2 weeks
table,
from today.
The table is set. The stage is set. Everything is ready to go.
Today.
Yes. You know, I think that like it's really funny how the way that this was presented, you had to be grinning ear to ear, because like you said, you love this Kenny who is just will not stop talking. He just loves himself some Kenny. And when you have Don Callis in his ear, those two were absolutely hilarious. I also thought it was really cool how you talk about setting the stage. You know, this is kind of the opposite of what they did with Orange Cassidy, where, you know, Kenny almost he built up Orange Cassidy by dismissing him, right? Calling him the mascot of AEW, not saying that he's not on his level, things like that. It set the tone for that match at Double or Nothing, where when Orange Cassidy did have those moments that pushed Kenny to his limit, it kind of was like an eye opener for the belt collector. Sure. This was quite the opposite. Kenny in his promo talked about how he sees a young Kenny Omega in Jungle Boy.
Yeah.
In the promo, he talked about how he sees a young Kenny Omega in Jungle Boy. when it comes to like the golden locks. He started talking about Jungle Boy's boyish good looks and, yep. and the skinny trunks and
the underwear model or something.
Underwear model, yeah. You know, Kenny loves himself some man. Like so, he was talking about you know like all that stuff. So that was really funny. But where Kenny focused in on was like he recognized, oh man, we're gonna have a great match. We're gonna have a, you know, it's gonna be awesome.
Yeah,
but. That then he honed in on the talking and sure. you know that is where it's going to be like is Jungle Boy going to be able to rise to the circumstances there or are they going to allow JB to kind of do what he does and let his work his actions do the talking for him? I think this is going to be an interesting way that they play this out. I think that when you look at in-ring matchup styles, there are a few competitors that jump. Kenny can go with anybody, right? Sure. Kenny's can have a great match with anybody. But when you look at the landscape of AEW, there are sure. certain competitors that jump out as people that I want to see go in the ring with Kenny. And JB is at the top of that list. I mean, this dude.
Absolutely.
And I loved how he snuck in, almost getting Kenny locked in that snare trap, which all of us here at Dynamite Download have been loving the snare trap. It's one of the quickly becoming one of the more lethal finishers in AEW. And then you talk about protected finishers. The one winged angel, no one can kick out of the one winged angel. The snare trap, no one's broken out of the snare trap. You're getting that. Like if JB can lock in the snare trap, can he take Kenny down? I love how they're presenting this match. Going to be a lot of fun when we see these two get in the ring together. And again, I think that Kenny laid it out there very well. This is almost a mirror images. This is like that Looper scenario where you're seeing wow. like the older version versus the younger version of himself. There's a lot of Kenny in JB's game. You can see it. There's a lot of that showmanship. He's shown an ability to not only be a high flyer, but have a smart technical ability. I really think that this one's going to be one that SPD, you and I, when we see it post-match, we're going to be grinning ear to ear because it's going to deliver.
It's another one of those win-win from us that Dynamite or AEW is going to deliver as a win-win.
Yep.
Speaking of a quick win, though, Lance Archer, anytime he's on Dynamite, obviously he deserves to be on every single week. We're huge fans of the Archer, but you know this made its point. I really – you know, a quick squash, as expected, when you see an action, it's never really too much of a hype match, but that's great. You know, he teased on Twitter after Double or Nothing, a new Archer's coming. He's got all the black and white photos online, you know,
yeah.
Rebuild, regroup, and Rampage. You know, he's kind of hinting for that. Maybe he's going to be the face of Rampage when it starts in 2 months or something like that, which would be perfect. But you know, we got darker hair, no color, and just kind of get to the point and leave. And Jake the Snake on the just giving his like seal of approval, just like yep. So where they go from there, I'm not sure, but just a dominant force is to kind of make us forget in a way of that loss to Miro. You know, there was something that we didn't want to see. This, you know, I talk about it time and time again of being rushed. We didn't want that match rushed, and obviously that seems like that feud's over already, mm-hmm. sadly, for now. Maybe they'll rekindle it down the line, but we needed to see a dominant Lance Archer, and we did see a dominant Lance Archer tonight. And what do you see going forward next? Because obviously, you know, not much to talk about the match, but other than just being a pure beast and a choke slam from a different, you know, time zone, essentially.
Yeah, no kidding.
Gosh, the elevation he can get on those choke slams. Like, where do you see him going from here?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the reasons why I felt like, okay, maybe Lance could be the dark horse to be Darby's tag partner. Was because
right. I think
felt
that would have been good.
Coming out of Double or Nothing, it's very evident we need to get Lance reestablished. And AEW right. went back to the well. They dipped back in the well. You throw Lance Archer in with a couple scrubs, and you let him just absolutely showcase how dominant he could be. You know, they even hinted at it, you know, Excalibur said, you know, man, more wins like this, Lance Archer will be right back in the title picture.
Yep. Smart move by them.
You know, they're going to lean into what they know works. Why reinvent the wheel? Lance Archer is going to go out there. He's going to start decimating people. And I think if you show an angry Lance Archer, like we talked about with Miro. You show an angry Lance Archer, a no-nonsense Lance Archer, one that's maybe not so distracted by, you know, the stuff that we saw with him getting like focused in on my time and things like that with Sting and stuff like that. You just let him focus in on destroying the person in front of him. Things will naturally start to come together for him. Where Lance goes from here is going to be difficult because I feel like, you know, is he going to lean into rebuilding? Are we going to lean into rebuilding Lance for another title opportunity right now? I don't see that happening. I just think that they need to just slowly allow Lance to get that credibility back a little bit. And it doesn't need to be anything dramatic, man. It doesn't need to be anything like beyond what they're doing. Give this guy a couple of clean wins. Let him just show off his power, his athleticism, his presence alone. And then I think with Lance, he's proven when we go back to the like early this year in 2021, if he I personally would like to see him go in. I know we just saw a battle of the Giants. I'd like to see Lance kind of go in a direction where he's fighting someone who's smaller than him. I think that Lance, I like when those matches when I saw with him in Phoenix. I like when Lance has that small guy to play off of him. In the landscape of AEW, there's not a lot of giants.
There isn't.
And I feel like AEW really could benefit from making sure that they protect Lance and make sure that he feels special because there's only so many guys who are that big, that strong, and that talented as far as athleticism go.
Very talented.
You gotta be careful not to lose the luster on a guy like that. Now, I feel like what I'm seeing is Lance is becoming sort of the Kane of AEW, where like, you know, he's always going to be relevant just because he is who he is. But that could also hurt him a little bit, man. They know that Lance is special because of his size and his look and his aura. And maybe that's holding him back from getting that big push that we hope that he gets. That's why I think if you put him in the ring with some guys who are smaller, put him in the ring with maybe like put him in a feud that allows him to clearly come out on top. I think that would be a smart booking decision. I think you allow Lance to look like the Murder Hawk monster again, and let him get some steam back. I think that would be a smart play.
Speaking of, you know, somewhat different, smaller in size, this was a play up online leading up to this. You know, Nyla Rose was really digging into Layla Hirsch's size, you know, so they brought out a little stool for her. So it was to get a little more height, but that's a good point. You have essentially, like you said, in a pre-show, a David versus Goliath and just in terms of pure size. But, you know, I think we talked about Tay Conti, like being one of the most, you know, growth she's had in the ring. And I think Layla is at the top of this as well in terms of growth in the ring. You know, some of her stuff from early on was a lot of ground and pound, which she still has, but now she's gone to the top. She did some, you know, this impressive moonsault, doing these impressive things off the top rope, you know, diving through the ropes. Like, she's really, you know, expanded her in-ring work, and I think she really showed up against, you know, the former champ, the native beast, as you call the gatekeeper of AEW. I was, you know, convinced multiple times that she was going to steal the win, and even the commentators, you know, were saying not necessarily stealing the win, but deserving that win. You know, it was a well-fought match. Obviously, the clear size difference had a huge play in it, but she really made the most of her opportunities when she was on the ground, being able to get those, try to get those arm bars in and different holds and things like that. But I mean, when you get a avalanche bomb off the top rope, no one's kicking out of that. I don't care who you are, man. That is was a brutal power bomb, to say the least. I mean, you could feel that. You can like almost feel like the rattling of the ring from watching it through your TV of how brutal that was, man. And so,
I mean, but SPD, this is like, this plays off that trend that I talked to you about, is like the win-win situations, right? Like the book, like when you have smart booking, it's very possible for both competitors to come out looking better. And this is another example of that, right? Like, you have Nyla, who, like you talked about, that avalanche bomb would put anybody away. The way that she delivered that avalanche bomb, bro, that was brutal. So you had you really leaned into like solidifying Nyla as the next contender for Britt. You know, mm-hmm. you had her look dominant and showcased her strength and why she is, I feel like, the gatekeeper of the AEW women's division. Yep. She is that boss that if you can get past the native beast, then you're established essentially. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you clearly did that, and you did that very well in this match. But then legit Layla also comes out looking that much better in the end too. You have this size disparity that a casual viewer, when you see those two go head to head and you see right. this little bulldog just fighting her heart out, given everything she has, it naturally, I mean, the crowd was going hot for Layla last night, man. I'm mm-hmm. telling you. I mean, I was at home. This was a match that I was getting very invested in as a viewer. I wanted sure. to see this one. I wanted to see what Layla could do. I wanted to see how she could overcome this obstacle. And although she came up short, she came out looking better in the end. You know, just being able – hitting that, like – when she did that rollover German suplex from the outside into the ring, that was a beautiful move. And I was dying to see Layla suplex the native beast. That's something that was a beautiful thing. I mean, hitting that release German on Nyla was fantastic. So I really liked how this story played out. You got to see that scrap. They built into that scrappy underdog in Layla, that tough, nosed fighter who's not going to back down from no matter who the challenge is.
Sure.
It really established that with Layla's character. And then it also put Nyla, I mean, it put Nyla back in the mainstay of the viewer's attention. This is a woman who is absolutely a powerhouse. And if you're a DMD fan like me, you look at it like, all right, Nyla beat Britt in the women's tournament.
Sure.
Nyla is a former women's champion herself. She looks as focused and angry as ever. This is a real challenge for the DMD. It's for her first title defense in the DMD era. Really thought this was a smart play by AEW's booking. This show overall just felt like a very intelligently booked show. And this was a perfect example of that.
Yeah. And we'll segue right into the DMD, man. I mean, that was a quick, I mean, when you give someone a minute and a half or 2 minutes and you talk about maximizing your minutes, you know, JR always says about maximize your minutes in the ring. Talk about maximizing your minutes on the mic. There is so much said in this in such short amount of time. And you said it, man, on Twitter. And, you know, DMD gave us a little RT, which is nice, man. Let the world know. Lethal on the mic.
She's lethal.
And I love – there's so – I mean, the ending was absolute a huge pop killer. But the fact that she was like, you look good flipping burgers. You should stick to
– I love that line.
So she gets the jab at Nyla. And then she was already, you know, hyping herself up, saying she's the best champion the company has ever had. And then she runs the whole division through the rakes too, saying that, you know, all these jealous bitches in the back.
Yep.
And so I was like, dang. And
nice
then,
recap. Keep going.
And then to put the cherry on top and how Nyla needs the title, but I make the title and I made this division, the DMD. Mm. And it was just a pure gold segment. I mean, we talked about it and you said it before, you know, MJF and her are like the top, the 1-2 punch on the mic. Yep. And that is in a roster filled with people that can carry themselves on the mic so well. You're talking the Jerichos, the Acclaims, you know, the Kenny Omegas, the Elites, you know, when you have Britt and Kenny as your champs, and then you obviously throw an MJF on the mic, like, wow. I mean, wow, that is perfect.
That's the thing. I mean, like earlier on, and then, you know, I'm the DMD fanboy of this crew.
You think?
Everybody, it was the very popular, very in thing to say, man, MJF is the best on the mic. He's the best heel in the company, best in the mic. And I've been saying it from the get-go. The DMD is every bit as bankable as MJF on the mic. And that's not a slam on MJF. I acknowledge that dude, every time you put a microphone in his hand, he delivers. He's intelligent. He's funny. He knows how to hit hard and get those lines in that hit hard. And I see the same pattern with the DMD. You said it best, SPD. Like, there's humor and comedy in her delivery, whether it was the flipping burgers line, or I also loved how she was so coy about how, like,
about legit Layla. Bless her heart. I would never make fun of her height. Like just how coy she was with that delivery. It was so perfectly played. So she has that humor. She's incredibly intelligent. We know she's a doctor, but her promos make sense. They're smart. They're well comprised. And then she goes for the jugular, bro. Like you said, that line about how you, no wonder why you were upset and jealous about my celebration, because you know you need this title to stay relevant. Whereas I make this title relevant.
For
like
sure.
It was. She checks off those three things for me: funny, intelligent, and she goes for the jugular. She knows how to deliver those lines. And when you get somebody who can hit those lines hard, and I know you're a Jericho fanboy.
Yeah.
Think about how many times Jericho hits those funny, powerful lines where the whole you might forget the whole promo, but you'll always remember the line, that one line that he delivered. And the DMD does that to perfection, bro. Like, she's just always on point with it. So I'm ecstatic about how this came out. I thought that this is absolutely perfect promo. Like you said, making the most out of a small moment. And before we move to the next segment, this is a big part of why we wanted, especially me, but why we at Dynamite Download wanted the DMD to become the champ. Because
we knew it, yeah.
Because we saw for so long in the Shida era, the women's champion was not represented on the show regularly.
Yeah.
The DMD era is going to change that. We know that the DMD's star power, her ego, like everything about her, she's not going to be sitting on the sidelines and letting a weekly episode of Dynamite go by without her face on it. And that's what you need. You need your women's
to have a champ. Exactly.
You need your women's champ. You need your champion to be front and center week after week. Keep us wanting more. Remind us why this division is important. Keep us engaged in the stories about this. And she did that to perfection. So this was a great start to me. We know that the segment, the coronation last week, maybe didn't hit like we had hoped. This one was absolutely a home run. They built off of Nyla's match earlier in the night. Again, smart booking. You built off of the segment last week. You built off of Nyla's match. Everything made sense. The story of this feud is coming together in a very intelligent way, and I really dig that. Really dig it.
You know it, man. You absolutely know it. And there is another story brewing with this one with Team Taz. You know, booking by Bonds, the resident Team Taz mark. He has released his booking by Bonds, the Uncaged, the Brian Uncaged, and it's looking more and more like that every single week that we're seeing this, that the cage turn, essentially, you know, which we're salivating over because we know this guy is a pure star. Who better?
Yep.
The stuff we saw in the ring, you know. The commentators, first and foremost, were putting Hangman over so much, which he deserves. I mean, the guy is a pure star, and how the biggest pop was Hangman at Double or Nothing and all this, and they're putting him over. But, you know, watching Cage in this match, he really stood out to me more than anybody. You know, we got robbed of some of Cage's star stuff during the picture-in-picture, sadly. But, you know, I paid close attention. I was watching it, you know, squinting my eyes in a little picture in picture. But he was curling Preston Vance. He was doing some great stuff, you know. And then we came back and we saw Cage throw a 619, a Hurricane Rana. And we just saw him doing some awesome moves for the guy that big. And
that's the thing
very
about
impressive
Cage.
Stuff, man. It's such impressive stuff, man. So these four guys, this is a hoss battle.
Oh,
yeah.
That's the amazing thing about Brian Cage, and that's what we've always loved about this guy is like it's uncanny. It really puts things in perspective when you look at the power this guy has. Mm-hmm. Being able, I mean, we've said it time and again, when he's able to catch guys in midair and when he's
did it
able,
again.
Like, dude, when he was bicep curling Preston Vance, that happened in picture in picture, but when Brian Cage was had Preston Vance and he was literally bicep curling Preston Vance, that's not Jack Evans, bro. That's not Matt Sydal. That's a legit powerhouse himself. And he was making it look easy.
I know.
So when you have a guy like Cage who's that strong, that powerful, but then can hit a 619, can hit a Hurricane Rana fluidly, it blows your mind. what this man is capable of.
It really does.
And it's no wonder why booking by Bonds has been week after week after week has been chomping at the bit. Like, this guy is a former Impact World Heavyweight Champion. This guy can be a legitimate top guy in AEW. Let's break him away from the nonsense and the drama of Team Taz. And that's even with Bonds loving Team Taz. Let's break him away from that and let this guy shine. Let this guy get the crowd reactions that he deserves. A guy like him who can do a power bomb, who can do the drill claw, which is one of the scariest, most impressive finishers in pro wrestling.
Right.
Talk about showcasing power. A guy like that who can do that, but then do these incredible feats of athleticism. You're wearing the babyface shirt. You need to print one off and send it over to the machine because he feels like a natural babyface. The crowd's going to eat this dude up, man. And to have him go against Ricky Starks and Team Taz is going to be perfection. You know that Starks, with the slap in the face.
Oh, my. That was a brutal slap.
Slap, brother. He did not pull back on that one.
He did.
You know, with the way that Stark's is gonna talk the talk, he's going to talk so much shit in this feud. It's going to make people want to see Brian Cage beat the heck out of Ricky Starks, get his hands on him. People are going to want that. It's just – and with Ricky Starks hurt, it plays into – oh, Brian Cage, you know, like, is he gonna hurt? Is he gonna go after Ricky Starks even after the neck injury? It's a brilliant story, and really booking by Bonds, everything that he put out there is starting to happen. Hobbs, I felt bad for him because in this match, you know, Hobbs is kind of an innocent bystander in this BS, right? He wasn't the one.
Sure.
He wasn't the one who like slapped Brian Cage in the face. Brian Cage gets pulled away, his tag partner in the middle. Imagine any other team, right? Your tag partner gets distracted and leaves the ring, and you're going 2-on-1 against one of the top young stars in the company, and like with Hangman and an absolute powerhouse in 10.
Yeah.
You're going 2-on-1 in the main event. It, like, I felt sympathy for Powerhouse Hobbs. And it's wild to say because he's such a big, bad dude. But, like, you start to say, like, man, he was left high and dry by his own team. And like, so you could tell why, like, as Bonds talked about, why Hobbs would get frustrated with the drama of Team Taz, where it's like, a huge opportunity for me was blown. I didn't do anything wrong. You know, like, why? Well, you guys are over here bickering amongst yourselves.
Sure.
I just want to win, you know? Like, so I don't know, man. I thought the way this story is playing is feeding into a lot of what Bonds was talking about in his Booking by Bonds segment. And the way that this was presented, again, win-win for everybody. Hobbs eats the pin, but he was left in a 2-on-1 scenario. He still looked like that spine buster battle between him and 10.
I know you tweeted about that.
That was phenomenal. Those two were trying to one up each other. So Hobbs looks strong still. I've talked about with Pac losing in that triple threat, getting hit by the belt 4 times. When you lose in that manner, it still protects the big man.
Sure.
But then you give the rub to a Preston Vance, you winning in the main event spotlight like that. I mean, drinking the beers with Hangman, it just was a star-making moment for multiple people in there, and it set the tone for the landscape changing where Team Taz, that we're going to finally rip the Band-Aid off of Team Taz, and we're going to allow this feud to blow up the way we want to see it happen. Everything hit on this one. The AEW really delivered in the main event.
I think when Cage does turn babyface, that this is, you have like essentially a Greek god that you want the fans to root for. And that's kind of what they're missing, this talented, awesome, like, it's going to leave the belt behind and kind of run through Team Taz. And that's going to be some great, great work there. And it's going to be some great pops from Cage that deserves, man. You know, when we saw him debut and stuff, like when we do see him in the ring, it's definitely just like a, you know, he was our top performer 1 week against Darby that he lost. And we both picked him as our top performer, taking an L because of how impressive he was.
Yep.
And the stuff he can do in the ring. And he could talk the talk and walk the walk big time. So this guy is an overall, and it's no wonder what Tony Khan sees in him in it as well. So I agree with you, man. That was, you know, a star making, you know, main event, and is perfectly booked main event with a lot of storylines that are going to be curious at going forward. It makes you want more coming back and to really keep pushing a young star in Preston Vance and with a completely over, you know, person in Hangman Page. And so, you know, in a jam-packed card, you know, my top performer, we'll talk about those real quick since we haven't talked about it in a couple of weeks because we've been doing live shows, was Miro, just by the pure, and it's almost like polar opposites, Miro versus Dark Order.
Yeah.
You know, you picked the Dark Order overall because they're featured a lot. You know, Team Taz is featured a lot overall.
Look at us switching. I should wear the babyface shirt
tonight. I know. Look at us, man, I went for pure, I went the heel route. I mean, no doubt. It's surprising. You know, there's a couple choices, but you know, overall I'm liking the push of Miro. That's what really is made me choose him, and his dominance and his ability to even, you know, he made it convincing, and overall he told a good story arc in the match. And so I always love that, but to finally give us what we want in the dominant angry Miro, I was extremely pumped about, and he showed it up, and I can't wait for his next match. And so hopefully they'll announce. I mean, we'll briefly look over the card next week that I got after we talk about top performer. But who in the Dark Order? Obviously, you know, Preston Vance and Evil Uno, like those two guys, like were on top of their game last night.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like this was, you know, I'm wearing the Exalted in Heaven shirt for a reason. I felt like this was a really, I don't know, I Brody's gone, but not forgotten. And, you know, in the Miro, like in the Miro versus Evil Uno match, there was talk about when Evil Uno delivered that big boot to Miro right in the middle of the ring. You know, the commentary team even mentioned, you know, that's a Brody Lee boot to the face. It just felt like this was a big night for the Dark Order for me. I thought that it was just
they needed
like,
it.
Yeah. And I just felt like it was a very, they all looked great. It was like anytime that they're out there, I just, there's like that rekindling of like the emotions of what happened with Brody. And I think that, like, you know, AEW has handled this whole thing with such class. I know that they get a lot, like this week, even after Dark, Negative One, you know, and the family and things like people, there's so many trolls out there on Twitter about like what's going on with Negative One and their use of him and stuff like that. And I just think that like they continue to AEW continues to take the high road. I admire that. I respect that. I respect how they're handling this whole situation. And I'm firmly, even though I'm team heel, I'm firmly on the corner of allowing this group to give this kid some healing and some joy in his life.
Of course.
After losing his hero and his father. And I just felt like the way that this Dynamite played out, the Dark Order really looked great. I think they looked cohesive.
Of course.
Standing behind Miro, or standing behind Evil Uno in his match against Miro and that big opportunity. You know, Evil Uno, we talked about it. He delivered in the ring. He held his own against the powerhouse champion. He looked great. And on social media throughout the week, he was cutting great promos on Twitter. And then in the main event, I felt like, you know, Preston Vance, when the Dark Order, when you win in the main event of Dynamite, that means something.
Sure.
I feel like Preston Vance, you and I, we've talked about this for a long time. We think that he's got a lot of upside. I love the Joker mask that he has. I think that's a really cool aesthetic, but I think that he's starting to feel more and more comfortable with his moveset. Yeah. You know, I think the Fool Nelson, he knows what works. And I think he's a young guy and he's really new to the business. And so it's very important for us as fans to step back and recognize when things are starting to click for a guy. Yeah. And you can see that Ten is starting to see, all right, these are my moves that are in my wheelhouse, right? These are the moves, these are the moments, these are the spots that are going to be my bread and butter. Mm-hmm. And I think that this match, when you pair him up with Hangman, it was just a great blend of personality and in-ring work
throughout the night for the Dark Order. And I think that that's what needs to be remembered is these guys have over the top, huge personalities that are a lot of fun, but they have some guys who have some real chops when it comes to in-ring work. And I think that that's kind of gotten lost with all the BTE stuff and all that stuff. But I felt like tonight was a reminder to the world. And I said it on Dark too. I watched Dark this last week and, you know, I saw it on Dark. Stu 10 and Colt Cabana had a trios tag match. And just, I feel like reestablishing that these guys can go in the ring is important. And I felt like this was a big night for the Dark Order. I thought that they came out looking really good tonight and they're trending in the right direction, which was needed.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm all for them. I love the Dark Order, what they do. And, you know, we talked about it a little bit earlier of the possibility of, you know, Tommy Ann coming to AEW, but Cody kind of squashed saying that the leader of the Dark Order is -1, which is great. You know, I'm all for that. But, you know, maybe it could be like the leader of the Dark Order does recruit someone else. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe he turns into a recruitment specialist down the line and does recruit Tommy Ann, not necessarily as like a potential leader. You know, you could still have -1 be the quote unofficial or official leader. But maybe he could be like, I recruited someone, guys, to that, you know, whatever, and be kind of like another 10, you know, another standout of there, because you have all these guys that are like tag team specialists and things like that. But I don't know where it goes that, but that's just interesting to think about. That would be fun. But, you know, leading up to next week, you know, just taking a look at this card, we have 5 official matches announced and 1 segment announced. I put in number 5 twice, but what match really is that you're looking forward to the most? I mean, look at on paper, a lot of people that we are big fans of. I mean, you talked heavily about the Darby Allin, Sky and Paige, but which one are you really looking forward to the most?
Well, I mean, right off the bat, you see, like, when you get Wardlow on the card, with how rarely we get to see that guy go, I think that, like, whenever you get an opportunity to see Wardlow on the card, that's a special moment. That's a special event. So I would say that's immediately jumps out at me as a great one. But, dude, across the board, this card, I mean, you're talking about, for me, you know, I love myself some QT Marshall. we're going to see QT Marshall and Aaron Solo go against Cody Rhodes and Brock Anderson. You're going to see a debut of Arn Anderson's boy. I think that'll be fun. And anytime you get a new face on the landscape, that's always a good time to see. And I love watching QT go. You see that Matt Jackson and the Good Brothers against Penta Kingston and Frankie Kazarian. That's going to be a freaking great match. But for me, the one that I got to say, Wardlow versus Hager, that is any time I get to see Wardlow go in action, how rarely we get to see him go.
Sure.
It's a special moment.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, obviously, especially being the cage match, the non-traditional wrestling match. And so we're going to get a lot of a new perspective for both of these guys, essentially, that we haven't seen in AEW. So I'm really looking forward to that. There's going to be some nice storytelling throughout the whole card with the Darby and the QT part. And I'm interested to see what Andrade has to say. So some great stuff out of that for sure. But can't wait. It's going to be another Friday night Dynamite. Hopefully this is the last Friday night Dynamite, and that we can take our coveted Friday night flight spot over again, leading up to Rampage, which debuts in almost 2 months from tomorrow.
It's going to be here before you know it.
It is going to be here for you know it. But thank you guys for joining us for Dynamite Download episode 38. We will chat with you guys soon. We will be back again next Friday doing our pre-show on Friday and then a post-show on Saturday again. So we'll keep this train rolling. Have a great weekend, everyone, and thanks for tuning in. And make sure to follow us online here on Twitter, Instagram. Check us out on Spotify. And Bonza's article will be live. As soon as this episode is online, you will know his article will be live.
Love it.